Live from Burbank, California, home of the Bob Hope Airport, it's the Mark Maron Show. And now, Phyllis Diller left skid marks on the tarmac. Mark Maron.
Wow! Man! Is it Friday?
Yes, it is.
Oh, excellent, man, because I thought it was Thursday for a second.
Yes, it
but
is.
But it's Friday, right?
No, it's not.
Come on, man, don't mess with me.
It's Friday, like in Taiwan.
Oh, so we're having the last day of the week in Taiwan.
That's right.
All right, man.
All our Taiwanese fans.
We're partying Taiwan style. Woo! Good evening, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor. Of course, you lurking conservatives and need machines and pain sponges and trainers of animals. Man, you know, I finally stooped low enough to watch a damn dumb TV show with regular people doing damn stupid things on it, Jim.
I know. Yeah.
I was there last night doing my homework, reading a bunch of things, reading about the Constitution. Reading
what's that?
I'm reading about Glenn Greenwald's book, How Would a Patriot Act? Defending American Values from a President Run Amok. I'm reading this as I'm watching America's Got Talent. So, you know, sometimes you're reading something about fighting for our liberties, and then I'd look up at the TV and I think, are they worth fighting for? Maybe we should just give up the whole experiment. Because I'm watching a guy, what was the most, did you watch it? You must have watched it.
Yeah, I watched it, yeah.
What was it, like 4 hours long? What is with these TVs?
Two hour special, Mark.
Is it, but are they all 2 hours long? It felt like it was never going to end.
Produced by, and created by, co-created by Simon Cowell.
And then they got the Simon Cowell light guy on there doing his business. You know, but they, you know what, for my money, they abused Regis Philbin. If you're going to have Regis Philbin, you give him the stage time he deserves. You don't treat him as a part of the freak show. Regis Philbin is one of the last broadcasters we have on television from the old days of broadcasting, and they're just using him as a guy who comes out on stage and goes, this next guy.
I don't know.
And
I think they're giving him a break. He's kind of senile. He looked kind of senile out there coming out. Doesn't even know what the hell he's referring to when he comes out there and makes a remark. Somebody backstage wrote for him. He goes, hey, how about that? Like, I got to get out.
Yeah, but...
And then he goes backstage.
I think he had bad surgery. That made me sad. He looked like he had some bad plastic surgery. Obviously, this is not a progressive topic, but I would like to say that the high point, the moment to me that was the moment of truth, is when that woman came out with her parrot, Jim. Mm-hmm. She came out with her parrot... In her little parrot trainer outfit, they did a fine parrot act where she'd go, all right, now have a drink of water. And the parrot would go, gick, 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 and then they made a series of noises, whatever. And they gonged her, which is basically what this show is. It's the gong show that has several different levels.
Yeah, yeah.
And this woman on the verge of tears said, you shouldn't have asked for animal acts if you didn't want them. We're not here for you to be your playthings. Like, her integrity was impugned. She was upset, and she was absolutely right. They just asked certain people to come out there so they could go, nah, no, not you. And she said, that's wrong. There's some people that don't care. They don't. They live for the abuse. But this person spent a lot of time training her parrot, and she didn't deserve that.
It wasn't a very good parrot act, though. It was just, you know, anybody could do that. If they live with a parrot, which you have to do, like a kid, then you're going to do that sooner or later if you're going to have some sort of act with
a parrot. So you're saying to me in the future that they're going to have animal acts where they're going to say, that is a great animal act. That's mm-hmm. just wonderful. Look at that guy juggling cats. That's good stuff, the cat juggler.
They did it with the dog guy.
Hey, that makes me think about something. I've got 4 cats. Maybe I'll be a cat juggler or else I'll turn into a weird cat person. Did you read about this guy, dude? This is not important stuff. You know, I've got things I want to talk about, the war
and
whatnot.
It's all part of the American psyche.
Huh?
The American psyche.
Yeah.
You know, what you do is you ram your fist into the heart of America.
Right, let's talk about real things, man. I'm going to save the guy who had 62 cats removed from his house. About 15 of them were dead, and the neighbors that couldn't swim in their pool because the cat pee smell was so bad from next door.
That's why that Constitution is an antiquated document.
Yeah.
Because it allows that.
No, the Constitution is not antiquated. It is designed for a reason, to protect us from what is happening in this country right now. We're going to talk about that with our guest in just a little while. That's Glenn Greenwald. We also have Polly Parsons coming up, who is the daughter of Graham Parsons, the popular musical act that died in a mysterious fashion and then was disposed of in an even weirder way. She's got a play coming out, a gothic southern rock opera that she is part, she's the producer of. She's also a part writer of a biography about her dad. And also Maria Bamford. Maria Bamford! Yay! She's the funniest person. Maria Bamford is. We did a show the other night for 7 people. Had a lovely time. 4 out of 7 enjoyed me, but all 7 loved Maria Bamford. And she's got new business cards. That's going to be great having her in her. Maybe she'll give you one of her new business cards.
New business cards?
Yeah, new business cards from Maria Bamford. But let's get down to the hard news, people. Apparently, the nuclear launch that North Korea was going to do, which called us out to possibly launch our missile defense system, as it turns out, that missile they were going to launch in a test was probably not really ready to go. The possibilities of it actually launching were slim to none. And ironically, apparently the missile defense system that we were going to engage to deter the missile also not too good. Doesn't work too well. Apparently, very inconsistent. And here's some facts for you. That in terms of how much we, since the Reagan administration, the United States has spent $92 billion on its missile defense program. All right. But it has effectively avoided any and all success in actually working. It has not successfully intercepted a missile since October 2002. And apparently the Korean missiles, they haven't launched one in, you know, many years, and they have no idea whether that works. So that turned out to be a little comedy, didn't it? I think so. Now, moving on. We talked about Rick Santorum yesterday. Yeah. I want to talk a little bit about him again today, because this desperate idiot, this was pretty hilarious as well. Rick Santorum, as you know, his approval rating is in the toilet. He's going to lose, and he should lose. He is such a Republican kiss-ass. He's the worst of the worst. He's horrendous. He's from Pennsylvania. Most of you who are listening know that. Well, today he thought he saw his... Oops. Today he thought... Make note of that. Today he thought he saw his window of opportunity, and he got on the Senate floor and said... We found weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. We have found the weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. This is what he says, okay? Now, apparently what happened is they found about 500 of these rotting chemical weapons on the border of Iran in Iraq that had been sitting there for probably 15 years. And he thought this was his wedge, that the president was going to jump on board and everyone's going to go, yeah, Rick, you reframe it. We're going for Iraq again. We're going no cut and run. And we found the weapons. And literally, a spokesperson from the Pentagon said, yeah, those are probably, they were from the 80s. They don't even apply to the weapons that we were going to look for. We find that stuff all the time. They just throw it away. So put that in your pipe and smoke it there, Mr. Santorum. He's still going down. That's all I say. Not that it makes any difference here in California.
That's pathetic. That's absolutely pathetic.
It is pathetic. That he really thought he had a slam dunk with that one. Now, here's some other news. I don't know why I'm just going through the news, because sometimes I enjoy going through the news. The minimum wage, here's information that I find repulsive, that CEOs of corporations literally earn 260 times the pay of the average worker. Woo-hoo! A CEO earned more in one workday than an average worker earned in 52 weeks. The typical worker's compensation averaged just under $42,000 for the year, and a CEO brought in about $11 million. It's heinous, considering the fact that they won't even pull a vote together. They can't. The Republicans are stopping them from even engaging in legislation, making an amendment, or possibly voting on an increase in the minimum wage at all. And to me, I think that that is heinous. I mean, Ted Kennedy has this plan that you would raise the minimum wage in 3 gradual installments over 2 years from $5.15 to $7.25 an hour. Now, the sad thing is, in the 9 years since the federal minimum wage was raised, 9 years ago it was raised, Congress has voted itself pay hikes, three pay hikes, totaling nearly $35,000 a year. That's raising their pay up to $168,500, while minimum wage earners who are actually working for a living, $10,712. How is that possible? How the hell can you live on that? And they keep saying these things like, you know, it's just teenagers that make minimum wage. It's only going to affect teenagers. And if you raise minimum wage, it's going to hurt small businesses because they can't compete and they can't stay in the game.
It's un-American to live off that small a wage. And that's why those poor people are un-American.
Well, dig this. What the hell did you just say?
You heard me.
All right.
You know, it's controversial what I'm saying.
Yeah, it's not. It's called the Republicanism.
But you know, it's their fault.
Are you changing teams, Mister?
It's their fault. You know, if they want to live like that, that's their fault.
Dig this. But here's the lie.
Wait, I have more.
I'm sure you do.
Oh, okay, go ahead.
In 2005, about a quarter of minimum wage earners were 16 to 19 years old. Teenagers. Fine. Nearly half, 46%, were 25 years old or older. A minimum wage increase would help people besides teenagers working their first job. And 35% of minimum wage workers are their family's sole earner. 65.5% of these workers are women. About three-fourths of minimum wage earners work full-time. That's a lot of people. And these are people without health care. These are people struggling. These are people that are feeding families. And this country can't even, you don't expect much. You can't, like, national health care, that would be great. You know, fairness in the workplace, that would be great. But just the minimum wage hasn't been raised in 9 years?
Yeah. Well, so-called illegal immigrants, most of them are employed. The majority of them are employed by huge American corporations, and they pay a lot of taxes, sales taxes, and they pay into the Social Security, too, because those companies put them up. And
yeah, they should be with
fake Social Security numbers.
They should be penalized. The corporation should be penalized, and they should stifle that because that does drive the wage down. And this just out, the number of people filing for unemployment benefits rose a lot last week, and the economy is slowing down. And I didn't even get to the war. The war, I mean, what is going on? I don't have time to do it right now. We'll do it in a minute. We're going to do can we spin the wheel of anger? Is that possible? Have we done that in a while? Can we do that? Is there any way that we can spin it? Let's do it.
Where's the wheel?
It seems like you're a little worked up, but not as much as maybe you want to try and get angry. Let's see, hear an angry sound.
All right, hear it.
Oh man, you look worked up. Let's spin the wheel of anger. And it looks like it lands on the war on drugs.
Man,
Jim, you ready to go with that?
Sure, man.
And we'll be back in a second.
He thinks Roe versus Wade is a World Cup soccer game. Mark Maron.
Whoa. Oh, hey. Man. No cough button in this place. Yeah.
Huh? We're in the moment.
62 cats they found this guy's house. They're going to have to level the house, Jim. Level it. There's so much cat pee and poop and dead cats, they'd crawled into the walls. They were everywhere. And
not really. Like 50 were in the refrigerator.
No.
So that's good.
Oh, boy. And that guy thought he was doing the right thing. My wife woke up this morning. She walked in the kitchen. She's like, oh, sometimes I forget that we run a cat house with my 3-4 cats eating. Okay, war on drugs. That's what you're pissed off about? That's what we're doing? That's
war
the wheel of anger?
Wheel of anger.
Let's make it happen, Jim.
Mark, yesterday the world was once again shaken by the news of 4 more gruesome beheadings. You thought I was talking about Iraq? No, I'm talking about a place even more dangerous and lawless than Baghdad. Yeah, I'm talking about San Diego. Okay, I'm exaggerating. It's not that bad.
I won't go in there soon.
No. It's close, though. Just a few miles close, to be exact, or several miles south of San Diego, just across our sacred border in the tourist hellhole of Rosarito Beach, where every Memorial Day thousands of Americans flock to celebrate the bravery of our vets by giving a little something back to the people who clean their bedpans for $3 an hour. Here in this sad little hamlet built on tequila vomit and the broken dreams of white trash America, 100 armed, masked drug traffickers dressed as federal agents kidnapped 4 men, 3 of them police, and decapitated them. Their heads were later found trying to cross into Arizona, apparently in an attempt to bring down the wages of disembodied American heads.
Yeah.
Yes, right. But not only were the 100 decapitators armed and uniformed, they were being paid less than Al-Qaeda's standard rate of 40 virgins in eternal martyrdom, Mark. How can you compete against a workforce like that? Here's my point, Mark. Drugs are the answer.
Okay.
Either let our young women and men in Iraq control and profit from the drug trade, or bring them home. It's as simple as that. Or better yet, outsource the military to the Mexican drug mafia. As you well know, Mark, the only thing more motivating than the thought of meeting God and having sex with 40 virgins is selling a pound of cocaine to Marion Barry.
Yeah.
That's right. Marion Barry joke. But if I may, there's even something more shocking than cutting the heads off live human beings and with dull machetes and filling them with some refreshing horchata.
Horchata.
And that's David Hasselhoff, Moesha, and some gay English guy from the London Daily Mirror.
Yes.
They're awful enough on their own, but when united as one on the new show America's Got Talent, they finally illustrate what Bush was talking about when Rove rammed his fist up our president's and made him mouth the words Axis of Evil.
Mm.
America's Got Talent is basically the gong show, as you earlier said,
mm.
but without the gong, without the humor, and without anybody talented running it. And that's why it's going to be a hit.
Huge.
Huge hit. Last night, these judges went nuts over an old broad in a granny suit doing a crappy rap song. When she finished, the gay English guy declared, "Rapping granny, you are what the show is about." And he's right. Not only is that what the show is all about, it's also what this country is about, Mark. Sure, you can axe that guy doing the balloon animals while singing All of Me, because like Moesha, this country feels threatened because they don't know where that guy's coming from. Why is he singing All of Me? Oh, I get it. He's putting together a face made out of balloons, that's why. But he looks kind of sarcastic. Is that sarcasm? We can't have that. He's multi-layered. But there's a bit of mystery to him. Is he making fun of this? Of us? Oh, God, no! Let's go rapping, Granny. No mystery there. She's a granny and she's rapping. What a combo. It's like watching old people do the twist and talk like beatniks, or a child doing stand-up, or a camel drinking a beer. And that's why drugs are the answer, Mark. Because that's what our country is all about. That show. In conclusion, I'd like to say, rapping, Granny, you suck. Yeah, you heard me. I'm not pulling any punches. You've just taken a ride on my wheel of anger. I'm Jim Earl, and you've been Earled.
I feel Earled. So that's who you're going after? After that whole rigmarole of the show last night? See, I never watch these shows, and you watch all of these shows with your sweetheart, and you enjoy them. So you are putting the kibosh on this one. This one's no good.
Rapid granny?
No, I get it, but you liked American Idol. You like the Surreal Life. You like all this crap that's on television, but this one doesn't cut the...
No, I hate them all, but, you know, it's like watching a car wreck. You can't turn it off, but you know this has gone too far. You can't do a gong show and then turn it into something like that.
Yeah,
the gong show is what you should be having.
That is all it was, really. Maria Bamford is here, and despite the fact that everything is going down the crapper, Maria Bamford remains chipper. That's what I like about her. She'll be here in a second.
He once killed a drifter for a donut. Mark Maron.
That was good. That was like before Krispy Kremes. You know, anyways. Let me just tell you a little story about Maria Bamford. The first time I saw her do stand-up, I got that feeling one gets when you know you're watching somebody totally unique. A special person. I get it every time I watch her. She is one of the comedians of comedy. She's toured Australia.
Yeah.
She toured the entire country of Australia.
Yeah.
And the other night we performed for 9 people.
Yeah.
That's a very small country. And she's here now. Welcome to the show, Maria.
Thank you very much for having me on to the program.
Yeah, it's nice to see you.
It's good to see you.
So you were on stage the other night, and you were wearing a dress, and you presented that as a new thing, and you're wearing one today.
I'm trying to explore my feminine side.
How's that going?
It's going real good.
Yeah?
I feel confident, and I feel... sensual.
Do you feel successful?
Well, you know what's funny is that comics don't recognize you if you're in a dress.
They're like, yeah.
Oh, Bamford. Oh, you're in a dress. Oh.
Oh no, not
you. Going up? No, I'm not. I can't go up in this dress.
It's weird though when you go up for the first time because you're on stage. You felt like vulnerable and weird,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I did feel weird because it was roughly.
Yeah, it was kind of
it
fun.
It was a light purple.
And you were talking. It looked great though.
Well, thanks. No, I felt good in it.
And you got new business cards, a dress.
I got new business cards. Have you ever been on a Vistaprint?
No.
Well, it's fantastic.
You can make business cards.
You can make invitations.
decorations, like, yeah. and make stuff look really fancy that probably shouldn't be fancy.
Yeah. Have you been on the one where you can send a monkey singing telegram thing?
Oh, God. My mom is constantly sending me these really slow-loading internet cards.
Yeah.
Like, from a friend of hers that makes them in Florida, and then it's got, like, it just takes forever for this basket full of flowers to slowly
yeah.
kind of, you know, the petals fall.
It's always disappointing.
It says, happy spring cleaning. The end.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't need to wait 10 minutes to download that.
Or it's something like riff on a bad old joke, like, you know, monkey swinging. Hey, you're swinging with me. Kind of ridiculous cartoon flash animation stuff. So you were talking about your mom, and I realized something the other night that we have similar backgrounds. Because I couldn't understand why do I like Maria Bamford so much? You know, there's got to be some sort of intrinsic chemical connection.
I asked myself the same thing.
That would make me identify with you. And your mom's like a food nut.
Well, yeah. Oh, she's this is her ordering at a restaurant. Okay, let's start it out with two pitchers of Diet Coke. You know what? Diet Pepsi is not okay. I hate to shoot the messenger, but it is not okay. And if I'm going to have to do this sort of grassroots thing, I will, you know, because we really need to shift. You know, you should offer choices. Diet Pepsi is not... Diet Pepsi's fine. Anywho, I have 7 points left and a fruit. I'm on South Beach and the Weight Watchers, so what can you do for me? What can you mix up for me? Huh?
Oh, it's so embarrassing, isn't it?
Well, listen, she's 65. You go, when does it end? You know, when can you just, you know, say, well, I think I'll have a piece of pie now.
My entire life, I wish my mother would do that. My entire life, I've got to sit with my mother who's holding up the ordering process. She's saying, look, I want a pizza. I don't want any cheese on it. I don't want any cheese. And I would just like grilled vegetables done with no oil on the pizza. And you're sitting there like you're embarrassed. My entire life, she embarrassed me. Like, she brings her own dressing.
Oh, that's specific. See, the thing about my mom, she'll ask for super specific, and then when they don't have it, she'll go, oh, what do you have? French fries with a ranch sauce and a strawberry sundae. That's fine. That's fine. That sounds about right. You know, it's like you try to keep on these things, but it's so unrealistic.
Or how about the picking at your food? Did you live with that?
Oh, yeah. My mom would, she'd go, oh, I thought you were done.
Yeah.
And I'd say, no. So then, yeah, then you had to scrabble real quick.
Did your mom ever pepper ice cream to stop herself?
No.
Oh, that's a good one.
Just horrible.
Like my mother, like if there was a cake at the house or something that somebody brought, she would like immediately after it was served, if there was a half a cake left, right down the garbage disposal. Or if there, she'd order ice cream. She's like, I'm just gonna have an ice cream. She'll get an ice cream. She'll take one scoop and then put salt on it to stop herself.
Oh my God, how's she doing now? Is she doing the same thing?
She looks great. You know, she's figured out a way to eat constantly and not gain any weight. It's kind of a sad scene to watch her eat, to combine her broccoli slaw and her chicken breast and her, yeah, it's good stuff.
Oh God, that's anxiety.
What about your dad?
My dad can eat anything, but he has a problem because my mom hides food from it, you know, so he'll be telling him, this is a joke,
yeah,
coming at you. He tells me about his secret stashes of stuff, you know, like, hey, kid, I got some powdered donuts. They're in the freezer underneath all the vegetable crap. Joe, what are you whispering about? You have got powdered sugar all over your face. Oh, run, kid, run! Poor guy. He doesn't have a chance to eat. But, yeah, he's a skinny little guy. I'm kind of like my dad, I think, biology-wise. So
really?
I,
you don't gain weight?
Well, no. I get a little tum-tum, which I'm choosing to call Sky Dancer, because she's so beautiful at night. Oh, good night, Sky Dancer. Oh, good night.
That's what you say to your stomach?
Yeah, that's what I say sometimes. To my tum-tum.
You know, Margaret Cho is belly dancing.
Oh, that's wonderful. I've heard.
Did you ever belly dance?
I've certainly done that. It's actually very difficult. I took three classes, and I did not have enough. It was one of those things where obviously I have a problem with body image, and as most, I think, Americans do, right? At this point, right? Doesn't
I do.
Everybody?
I don't think Jim does, really.
No, I love my body. I'm a beautiful boy.
Oh, that's wonderful. See?
Beautiful boy.
That's, mm-hmm.
Oh, my God.
That's great. Well, I went to belly dance because I felt like I didn't have enough belly to make a difference,
yeah,
you know, because that's sort of the whole thing.
Yeah.
But now I do, so I was thinking maybe check it out again. Mm-hmm.
Do you do any, like, Do you go to therapy?
Oh, yeah, I'm seeing a therapist.
You are?
Therapist. I can't say it properly because I don't take it seriously. And, I've seen a therapist. I've seen a life coach because I'm really getting into competitive living. I know I'm going to win this one. And, a therapist.
What does a life coach do?
A life coach, well, I thought it was going to be more like in high school, come on, get out there, kid, you can take that guy, you got the sack. But it's not. It's about setting small, manageable goals. Number one, I got three goals. Number one, master and defeat death. Number two, change the world. Number three, drink more water. Am I right, ladies? It's so hard to get enough water.
Right, how come we have to drink so much water? Do you do it?
I don't do it. I'm drinking too much Diet Coke, as I told you. But the thing is, the good thing is that instead of getting it single can, I take a clay jug down to 7-Eleven, and I fill that every day.
In the machine?
I'm doing
You're like, oh, no, you've become like the weird lady.
Yeah, definitely.
The lady's here with the jug again, who they don't even want to bother because it's not worth it. You're like, just let her do it. Just let her do it.
Where do you find clay jugs?
Along the seacoast. I don't do that. I buy it by the can.
Cans are better than bottles.
Really?
I think so.
Okay,
because they stay colder and it's funner to hold a cold can.
Well, I thought you had a moral reason.
No. No, I believe the cans are, they stay colder and they're more enjoyable to hold. And there's, for some reason in plastic bottles, the soda never gets as cold as it could. Whereas in a can, very crisp, cold. Look, these are things that I think about.
No. You're preaching to converted. Oh. I only buy by can, except when I'm out and I enjoy the out soda. The out soda where you go out and then they have crushed ice. Only a few special places get the crushed ice. But the therapist is having me sing my anxieties aloud.
What? Are you serious? That's the kind of therapist you go to? Does she burn incense during the sessions?
Why do we sing? Let's take the power away from those anxieties, man. Sing them aloud. How do we call those anxieties gremlins?
Well, why don't we just call them anxieties?
Would you feel more comfortable with goblins?
Yes. And so this is my new song. I hope you enjoy it. If I keep the kitchen floor clean, no one will die. As long as I clench my fists at odd intervals, then the darkness of the thing won't force me to do anything inappropriately violent or sexual at dinner parties. As long as I keep humming a tune, I won't turn gay. It can't get you if you're singing a song. Yeah.
And that helps, right?
It's helping. Super.
Do you have the OCD?
Oh, yeah. I have the unwanted thought syndrome part of OCD. If you haven't heard of it, you can Google it.
Tell me what those are.
Oh, it's when you have, like violent or sexual thoughts. I started having them when I was, like, 9 or 10.
Which ones?
Both.
Yeah.
Both. And I couldn't sleep at night. I was all scared. And I had it until, I was, 32, and then I Google it. Like, I Googled it on the internet just to see if anything would come up, and there's, this huge, LA, there's a whole OCD center on that specific thing.
What differentiates those from just regular violent and sexual thoughts?
Well, the problem is that it's like a compulsion where you try to stop the thoughts, and you try to stop them, and try to stop them, and try to stop them.
And they keep coming?
Yeah, so it's like, let's say...
You're like, no, I don't want to do that to that guy! No!
Exactly. And it keeps you from doing stuff, it keeps you from, because you're afraid that you're going to do it, and the whole thing, it's like this whole it's just like with turning on off and on the iron or the stove or checking the lights or whatever.
Yeah.
It's not rational. It's like, of course you wouldn't, kill that guy or pee on a statue of Jesus or tell your mother to F off. But because you thought of it, you think, oh, I might do it. And then it turns into this whole just constant thing. And some people have it so bad that they can't hold down a job. Turned out I could be a comedian.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
But that must be horrible in a workplace situation.
Yeah.
Where you're just sitting there looking at one of your coworkers, standing over them going, I might do it.
Yeah.
And it could be either, have sex with them or kill them.
Yeah. And they can't, people have a hard time making eye contact, having, intimate relationships and stuff because they feel like, oh, it's something I did or something bad about them.
Oh.
But it's not,
That's paralyzing.
Yeah, it's paralyzing.
Are you working anywhere? Can we plug some gigs? Not tonight because it's going to be on late.
Oh, yeah, I got a lot of sweet gigs. Well, here's the thing. This is the big, the corporate thing I'm doing. I'm on a billboard as a cartoon character on Sunset Boulevard for the movie theatrical release of Barnyard, which is directed by Steve Odekirk, by Nicktoons Films, or Nick Films. Anyway, so I'm playing Mrs. Beattie, the neurotic farm wife. That's exciting. And then I'm doing a show...
Is that a movie?
That's a movie.
That's great. Graduation.
Yeah, and it's all celebrities in it, so I'm not a celebrity, but
yeah,
I'm...
Yeah, you are, too.
And then I'm going to Montreal. I'll be at the Montreal Comedy Festival, and then I'll be at the Edinburgh Festival in Scotland for one whole month.
This is your year.
It's going to happen for me.
Yeah, this is it.
And if it isn't, it's going to be next year.
Yeah, or the year after. There's no age limit.
There's not. Look at someone who's older.
I always do. What, are you kidding me? My new one is Rodney Dangerfield.
Yeah.
He quit the business.
Oh, man.
Didn't come around until he was 60.
He was so depressed, though, dude. Like, and he died. He seemed really depressed, like, every time they did. Anyways, I'm not meaning to judge. I'm just saying, I feel like I'm done. I've made it. I'm out.
Have you ever been to Montreal before?
I've been once, and it was fun, but nothing's ever happened.
No, you're gonna have a good time. This is it.
Yeah,
this is it. You're a complete entity. You're exactly where you need to be. MariaBamford.com if you want to check in on that and go. Where's the billboard?
Oh, it's on Sunset at I can't remember which cross street, but it's like 9200 Sunset.
Go see a cartoon character that's gonna be her. Right?
Yeah, Mrs. Beattie.
All right. We'll be back with... what are we going to be back with? We're going to be back with... Pitch of the Week? Great.
Now he's the hottest he's been in 400 years, Marc Maron.
That's for sure, without a doubt. Older, wiser, hotter.
That's right, Brahim.
Right, that's right. You tell me, Brahim. Hey, we got a caller, Jeff in Fontana. You're on the air with Marc Maron, buddy.
Hey, Mark. It's actually John Zach. The NSA guy has been tapping your phone. So, guess who's quitting his job and moving to L.A.?
Oh, no.
I'm taking the plunge, man. I'm pursuing my dream of stardom.
Look, John, not that you and I are friends or anything, but you've got a good, steady job at the NSA, and I really wouldn't mess with that.
You're talking to me like I'm new at show business. I've read a book about script writing. I've done a couple of guest sets at a Yuck Yucks. I'm ready.
Oh, gee, John, I don't know.
A lot of nice people already. Yeah. An agent's receptionist told me to send in material. She's definitely a contact. And a friend of my cousin knows a guy at Bob Goldthwait's development company.
I don't...
He's going to be just another one of your showbiz peers.
All right.
But I'm still an NSA agent for another week, so respect the badge. All right, buddy?
Man, that's...
I hope he does all right out here. I don't know.
Everybody does all right out here.
All right. Well, look, one of our writers, folks, Bruce Cherry, has been trying to get a regular character on the show. His presentations have delighted staff and listeners alike. What can I say, people? He delivers a heaping helping of funny, served up with a side of whimsy. Now it's time for my favorite part of the week. Please welcome my dear friend Bruce Cherry for Bruce Cherry's Pitch of the Week.
Thanks, Mark.
Mm-hmm.
I really need to talk to you. I've been getting some feedback about the Pitch of the Week. A lot of people are upset that I can be heard on one station.
You mean you can be heard on only one station?
It's not what I said, is it?
Well, what did you got this week?
I decided to bring back another character because of demand.
Nobody demanded that a character return, Bruce.
I meant the demand of coming up with a different character every week. I can only do so many accents.
Often within the same character.
Aye, matey. Let's get to business. What's the number one complaint you get about the show?
That it can be heard on one station, Bruce?
Yeah, and after that?
People want to know more about my background. The listeners don't want the real Marc Maron to be hidden behind a facade of scripted verbosity.
Verbiage. See, it says right there, verbiage, not verbosity.
Sorry. A facade of scripted verbiage.
Okay. So, what do? We give him a taste of the real Marc Maron.
Mm.
We bring back the character, you may recall this one, your hayseed cousin Merle. Listeners get to hear all about your upbringing in a remote Appalachian hollow.
But I didn't grow up anything like that.
Yeah, Mark, I'm creating an everyman persona for you, okay? I'm doing you a favor in that sense. The last thing you want listeners to know is that your Stalinist free love parents raised you as a girl until you were 12.
I wasn't raised as a girl.
That's the attitude. Now let's go to script. As the curtain rises, we join the Mark Maron Show in progress.
Blah, blah, blah. My opinion. Yak, yak, yak. Whoa, wait a minute. Who's this now entering the studio?
Howdy, Mark.
Why, it's my rustic cousin, Merle. Merle, I'm surprised to see you here.
Mark, what did I tell you when you left home? I said, I'll be all around in the dark. I'll be everywhere. Wherever there's a fight so hungry people can eat, I'll be there. Wherever there's a cop beating up a guy, I'll be there.
Because that guy is always you?
Yeah, stupid cops.
Hey, what brings you to California, Merle?
Mark, I'm afraid there's trouble back in your hometown, Maron's Hole.
Wait, my hometown is named Maron's Hole?
You know that. It was named after its founder and your ancestor, Jedediah Hole.
I might as well play along. Okay. Hey, what's up in Maron's Hole?
I'm glad you asked, and a little surprised you agreed to. Mark, the sheriff is trying to shut down your family business, Maron's Weed and Feed.
Merle, why is the sheriff trying to shut down a lawn and garden store?
Well, we started selling actual weed. I mean, people kept asking, and nobody was buying the turf builder until we added PCP.
Okay, so Maron's Weed and Feed has become the front for a drug operation?
Well, it was, but we got nervous and changed it into a Hooters.
Oh, now I'm ashamed.
Not to worry. We didn't pay the franchise fee, so we had to change one letter in the name. Mark, your family now runs a hooker's restaurant.
So why does the sheriff want to shut us down?
Well, we started providing actual hookers. I mean, people kept asking, and nobody was buying the calamari. Well, they sure are now.
Well, what are you doing about the sheriff?
I forced a showdown. I said, Sheriff, Maron's Hole ain't big enough for the both of us.
Oh, this is getting painful.
See? I told him so.
No, no, I mean the jokes. That's it. My hayseed cousin Merle's banished.
Are
not
you insane?
Working.
What, you saying you don't want this as a recurring character?
No. Say goodbye to Maron's Hole.
Oh, that cuts. Well, I'm going to shop the screenplay.
Yeah, you do that, buddy. Look, folks, in a minute, we're going to be talking to... thank you, though. We're going to be talking to Glenn Greenwald, the author of How Would a Patriot Act, later. It's going to be good. We got Polly Parsons out here, Graham's daughter, producer of the new rock opera, gothic southern rock opera, Taking the Jesus Pill. Stick around.
What's that in the refrigerator? Mark Maron.
Thanks, Jim.
You're welcome.
Glenn Greenwald, my friends, was just a guy, not a very political guy, and he believed in this government's ability to correct itself because of the way it was designed by the founders of this country. But not unlike many of us after 9/11, after the great momentum of all of us getting together as a whole country started to disintegrate and we all watched the administration rapidly chip away at the liberties we are guaranteed by our Constitution, Glenn Greenwald couldn't help but take action. He started a blog, Unclaimed Territory, and that's at glenngreenwald.blogspot.com, and he has written a little book now called How Would a Patriot Act? Defending American Values from a President Run Amok. He's on the phone with us now from Atlanta, where he's on his book tour. Welcome to the show, Glenn Greenwald.
Thanks, Mark. Great to be here.
Well, I appreciate you coming. Now, you go out of your way to say that you weren't very political and that you believed that the system worked for the most part and that that you were even behind President Bush initially after 9/11. What was the series of events that led you to write this book? What hit you in the head?
Well, the first event that really started to give me cause for alarm was when the administration arrested and detained Jose Padilla, a U.S. citizen, on U.S. soil, and put him into a military prison, refused to charge him with any crime, and even prevented him from speaking with anyone on the outside of the prison, including a lawyer. and then claimed in a court that the president had the right to detain U.S. citizens indefinitely without charging them with a crime. That event, which was in 2002 and 2003, was the first to really shake my confidence in the administration and make me think that they were quite extremists.
Now, do you have a background in constitutional law? Are you a lawyer?
Right. I've been practicing constitutional law for 10 years, and I would devote a lot of my practice to defense of First Amendment rights and 14th Amendment rights and other rights, but was never overtly political until I started seeing how extremist this administration was intent on being after 9/11.
Well, now, you know, we're talking like, you know, and we're talking about other things. We're talking about transgressing the Geneva Conventions. We're talking about, like you just said, denying habeas corpus. We're talking about wiretapping, unilateral decision-making from the executive branch. And that basically what's happening is we're starting to live under exactly what the Founding Fathers built the government to fight against.
Well, that's right. And all the instances of abuse of power that you've mentioned have all been covered relatively well, or at least relatively intensely by the media. What has not been discussed, and it's really why I wrote the book, is the fact that all those scandals really have a common root. And that root is that this administration has adopted theories of power which essentially hold that the president has unlimited and unchecked powers with regard to all matters concerning national security, and that includes even actions that the government can take against U.S. citizens on U.S. soil. And as you say, having a president that has unchecked power that the Congress can't interfere with or the courts is exactly and expressly what the founders first and foremost wanted to avoid.
Well, and the horrifying thing is, Glenn Greenwald, is that, you know, Dick Cheney last week said he was proud of how he has realigned the government and neutered Congress. This is exactly what he set out to do.
Well, you're exactly right. One of the points I make in the book is that there were a lot of ideologues in the administration before September 11th who wanted to invade Iraq, and they used September 11th as the pretext or the opportunity to do that. That is the same as is true as with this idea of the president as monarch or full power vested in the president. People like Dick Cheney and Don Rumsfeld and some academics on the fringe have for 20 years talked about having a president who has unchecked power. Richard Nixon believed in that and advocated it, but September 11th and a Republican-controlled Congress gave them the opportunity to take that to an extreme beyond anyone's imagination.
Now, let's talk about that extreme, and let's talk about, you know, the condition of this heightened denial of civil rights in this country and just legal rights. Now, they try to play it off as these are temporary conditions that need to be addressed. Now, is there any truth to that whatsoever? Can this stuff be legislated back the other way? Do you have any what is your prognosis for some of these things like the Patriot Act and some of these wiretapping rules? Is this forever?
Well, you know, keep in mind, I mean, the Patriot Act is something that was passed by Congress. So for better or for worse, that is the law of the land. Although even in the Patriot Act, there are provisions that require the president to report to the Congress, and the president has said that he doesn't intend to comply with those or doesn't have to. And so I think the point is not so much an individual law-by-law analysis of whether laws have gone too far, because those can always be changed back. What can't be changed back is if you change your system of government to invest in the president the power to exercise power without any check at all from the Congress or the courts. And the problem is once you have a president who has that power, it becomes almost impossible to wring it out of not just this president's hands, but subsequent presidents as well.
Because they can't help but want it. That's really what the root of tyranny and that type of power entails, is that once they get it, they're not going to want to let it go.
Right, and what's so frustrating and significant is that the founders knew that people in the executive branch would fight for executive power, but what they also assumed and hoped for and counted on was that people in Congress would fight against that and fight for congressional power, and judges would fight against it and fight for judicial power. And yet those checks on presidential power have just profoundly failed. We have a Congress that has allowed the president to do whatever he wanted and a court that basically defers to whatever claims the president has.
Well, what kind of people are these? Why has this happened? Why have these elected officials and appointed officials decided to let this president do that? I don't understand. They're Americans. Are they all just bad apples? Are they afraid?
That's a good question, and I think the answer is complex, but I'd say that the principal reason is that in the aftermath of 9/11, the Democrats who controlled the Senate were just afraid of not standing unified behind the president. That was at least a little bit more understandable than the next 4 years. And I think a lot of the Republican politicians have gained greatly from their alliance with the Bush administration and the rogue political machine, and they don't want to challenge it. They want to maintain allegiance to it. And some of them simply believe that we really are in this grand holy war, this war of civilizations, and we need to best the president with absolute power in order to win it.
Okay, but now when we talk in terms of the Supreme Court, that, you know, appointing somebody like Sam Alito, like John Roberts, who I guess the jury is going to be out for a little while, but we can assume what's going to happen in relation to Alito. He is going to defer to the presidential and executive power almost every time, according to his record.
Exactly, and this is the point I've actually been trying to make as much as possible, is that it's always assumed that when judicial appointees are chosen, that they're chosen because of their view on Roe versus Wade or controversial social issues. The reality is this president has not cared about that at all compared to expanding executive power, and these judges have been chosen not just at the Supreme Court level but throughout the federal courts with an eye towards getting judges who will defer to claims that the president has the absolute right to act in the area of national security. And I don't think one can be optimistic about the prospect that the judiciary will take a strong stance against the president. They haven't so far.
And also you have Dick Cheney in there, who's just changing laws as he goes along, you know, in retroactively changing laws to watch his own ass, and there seems to be no way to fight against this. It all seems very hopeless to me, Glenn Greenwald, and I hope that you have some positive action we can take in your book, How Would a Patriot Act? What are some of the things that we can do?
Well, I mean, I think that the ultimate check and the real check in our system of government is for the American people to first realize that the government is abusing its power and is as radical and really un-American as it is, and then secondly, to decide that they won't tolerate that. And, you know, in my opinion, it isn't that the American people have know about these things and have decided they don't care. It's that they really haven't been informed about them because our media is just so fundamentally broken. And so the purpose of my book, and I think the purpose of blogs generally, is to bypass this broken media and communicate with our fellow citizens. And once our citizens realize just what the government is doing and what a profound assault it is on the values that define our country, I believe that action will be taken. That's how change has always been effected in our country.
Well, I hope you're right. But, you know, I see something like today, what's going on with the way they're framing the war again and trying to corner the Democrats into looking like a bunch of surrender monkeys. And you get mixed messages and different messages from all of them, ranging from Frist to Casey today saying that we're probably going to see a lessening of troops, to Rumsfeld saying that that's not going to be permanent, to the president saying what he's saying, that I think a lot of times the population is getting so much information from so many different outlets, and they are making it confusing on purpose. I don't know what it's going to take to change the heart of enough Americans all at once, unless it's something drastic, to take this action you're talking about.
Look, I mean, you know, the reality is that Americans don't turn against the president overnight. It takes work and it takes time. But if you look at what has happened, there really has been a pretty fundamental change in the way that Americans perceive this president. I mean, he was at 60 and 65% approval ratings for 3 years. Anything they wanted, they got. Virtually nobody challenged what they were doing. And his approval ratings have collapsed. For a year, he's been hovering around 30%. Which is just a few points more than Richard Nixon was at when he was forced to leave office. There's clearly a sea change in how Americans perceive of this government, and we have some emotional distance between now and 9/11, and I think these fear-mongering tactics are not working nearly as well. But I think Democrats, it's up to Democrats to take a stand and speak with a clear voice. And
oh, boy.
I think you're right. They haven't done that, and that's the biggest problem.
I hope that happens. But now, let me just make sure why I got you on the phone. There's no way that the Supreme Court can just, just say, all right, Bush is president for the next 20 years.
Well, I mean, you know, there's not no way that could happen. And, you know, the Supreme Court throughout our history has made some pretty abominable decisions. But, you know, there have been some limits that the court placed on the president. In the 5-4 decision, they said that you can't put a U.S. citizen in a military prison and not give them the opportunity to contest the accusations, which seems sort of basic, but it took the Supreme Court to say that. So, you know, we have a history in our country where we've been able to avoid tyranny and abuses at the last minute by using the tools the founders put into our system of government, and it's just up to American citizens who care about these things to figure out how to make sure that doesn't happen.
Wow. I can only imagine what your book tour has been like when you go to places with people. Like, it probably becomes a town hall meeting, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, people are inspired. You know,
yeah.
As you said, you know, people are looking for ways to find something to do to change our government. And, you know, I started my blog 8 months ago, and I wrote the book, and You know, it's had a big impact, and a lot of people can contribute in a lot of different ways. And I think the blogosphere is enabling people to feel like, you know, an alternative media venues like your station are enabling people to feel like they don't have to rely on this very broken and dense media to affect change. There's ways that we can communicate with one another and organize without that.
And they're not alone.
Definitely not.
Great. Glenn Greenwald, great to talk to you. Thanks so much for writing the book.
Thanks so much for having me. Appreciate
it. You bet. Take care. How Would a Patriot Act is the name of the book, Defending American Values from a President Run Amok. Glenn Greenwald, the author. You can also go to Glenn Greenwald, that's Glenn with two N's, .blogspot.com, and check out what he's got going on there. We will be back in a second. I think we've got a new Al-Qaeda news.
Now his "Hey, I'm Kermit the Frog" profile has been kicked off MySpace. Mark Maron.
Oh, I think I'm almost over the MySpace, and I barely used it. There's something wrong with my account. I mean, I can't email from it.
Have you talked to Tom?
Yeah, sure. Yeah,
he's very helpful.
I tried to email Tom, but that guy Glenn Greenwald, man, this is a good little book. You forget when they put the full press on towards midterms to get everybody jacked up about this war and trying to make the Democrats look like a bunch of surrender monkeys, that nobody likes the Republicans anymore. Nobody likes the president anymore. People are against this war. Hold on, I'll talk about it in a minute. Hey, we have a caller, Dominic in Eagle Rock. You're on the air with Mark Maron. What's up?
Hey, Mark. It's actually John Zach, the NSA guy, has been tapping your phone. Listen, I think I told you I quit my job and I'm moving to L.A.
Uh-huh.
Of course, I have access to your phone records for the last couple of years, so I hope you don't mind. I called all your industry contacts and told them you said to read my screenplay.
What are you talking about?
You could have done it yourself, but I saved you a little time, right?
I'm sick of that guy in my life.
Man, he is really pushy. Yet, you know what? He's going to get somewhere, I bet.
Well, that's the kind of people that get somewhere. We're going to have Polly Parsons in here in a second with her co-producer and co-creator, Charlie Turrell, who is going to join us. Right now, we just got a dispatch from the Al-Qaeda news, though. It's important that we just got this off of the Al Jazeera website.
From across the nation, around the world, and under a burqa, this is Al-Qaeda news with hosts Mohammed and Mahmoud.
I am Mahmoud, and we will destroy you. Now, Mohammed with the news.
Today's headline comes right from the filthy collection of newspaper lies in the American media. It says, Al-Qaeda planned to release poison gas in New York City subways in 2003.
Oh, brother, you're kidding.
I am not known for my sense of humor. See, it's right here in black and white. And our answer to these lies will be written in blood.
Why would anyone release gas in a New York subway?
Who would know this? It's like releasing water into the ocean.
When I was in Al-Qaeda cell in New York, I avoided the subway.
Oh,
the
yes.
heat, the smell.
Oh, yes.
I'd rather be in the desert with a herd of goats.
Oh, yes.
Plus, it's too dangerous. You must walk in New York. It is the only solution.
Oh, the only thing worse than the subways is cab drivers. They drive like maniacs, and they don't even speak English. The screaming, the hollering. Where are these people from?
This one time, I took the number one subway to take pictures for an attack on the United Nations. And this guy gets on, and I think, oh, jeez, don't sit next to me.
What are you talking about? You don't take the number one train to the UN, idiot. The number one goes up the west side to Zabar.
No, you are the idiot. You take the one train and get off at 49th Street, and you walk over a few blocks. What are you talking about?
What donkey ass? You're still on the west side. You sicken me with your idiotic sense of direction. Do you even know how to face east? You insult Allah with your ignorance. You take the B train all the way to the end, and you get off at the Roosevelt Island tram.
The Roosevelt Island tram? Your brain is infested with maggots, idiot!
Oh, don't tell me about New York City. I lived in New York cell for 1 year until they turned our cell into a Victoria's Secret. I know about New York City. I miss the pizza.
Oh, yes.
Ray's Pizza on 29th. Oh, that was good pizza. It is the original American pizza. We had a deal in my cell. No suicide bombers on Ray's Pizza.
That is not the original Ray's Pizza. Everyone knows
that. Of course it's the original Ray's Pizza.
Idiot! The real Ray's is on 6th Avenue and 11th Street.
Oh,
everyone knows that.
How would you know?
Oh, I know. I've been to Ray's many, many times.
How
many
would
times.
You even know a thing
this
like
this? This is Tina, the weather girl at Al-Qaeda News. And today, we'd like to welcome a new thing. WAJZ in Kabul. Light jazz all the time.
Session with the Rockettes. That girl you talk, she is not calling you back.
What are you talking about? She of course you call me.
They're nice to everybody.
From Kenny G to Diana Krall to Osama bin Laden. Keep it cool with WAJZ in Al Qaeda News. Ooh ah la. That is cool, cool jazz.
You're a pathetic man.
You are royal. You are not of your mind.
All right. Thank you, Tina. I am Muhammad.
I am Mahmoud.
And remember, our news is bad news.
For you!
Oh, that's much more exciting than those El Zawiri tapes. Huh? Am I right on that, Jim?
The original race piece is on 2nd Avenue. On the
it is not. Side. Oh, come on, stop it. Yeah, it's at 6th Avenue and 11th. It's at 6th Avenue and 11th. One of those guys was right. 62 cats they took out of that guy's house. Don't let me get that far. All right, I'm done.
How many were living?
Oh, that's the gross eating. Part. There's like...
You're doing it to eat, you know.
No, they're not. And I don't know. There's something wrong. 47 living cats. So that means 15 of them were dead.
Well, oh, they got to eat something.
I'm very excited. A little nervous to talk to Polly Parsons because, you know, her... her dad is a myth. A myth, my friend. We can get the real story on what happened after he died. I couldn't watch that Johnny Knoxville movie. It was awful. We'll be back with Polly Parsons and Charlie Turrell.
And now he's on the bottom of the top of the pop, Mark Maron.
Thank you, Jim. I want to give it a second. The roll up here full of rack up glory, man. That's a lot of machines. All right. That song you hear is from the new Southern Gothic rock opera, Taking the Jesus Pill. Polly Parsons and Charlie Turrell. Nice. Are the producers and creators of this Taking the Jesus Pill show, which opened last night. Polly Parsons, also the daughter of the rock legend Graham Parsons. She also helped write a book about Graham Parsons called Grievous Angel, an intimate biography of Graham Parsons, which I'm holding up as if people can see it. As if we're on television, I'm holding the book. They're both here in the show, here in the studio with us. Welcome aboard, gang.
Hi.
Thanks for having us.
It's great to have you. I'm looking forward to seeing the show. So it opened last night, and it kicked ass.
Yes, it did. It opened last night. It was an amazing crowd. Everybody was screaming and yelling and on their feet. It's a very hedonistic, fun, crazy show.
Well, you better tell us what it's about then, because I'm in.
Well, it's a Southern Gothic rock opera. It's a multimedia event. Uh-huh. So basically, it's narrated by a live band with movies shot all over the walls, and the play goes on around you in a bar.
Okay.
So there's a lot of scantily clad, gorgeous women. There's a lot of cabaret. There's a lot of Southern rock. There's a lot of really amazing musical elements. It's a bit of a cross between Romeo and Juliet and Rocky Horror Picture Show on acid.
Charlie's just sitting here with dark glasses going, yep.
That's right.
I made it.
That's right.
Yeah. Wait, now, what's the story of the opera? What's the trajectory, the plot?
Well, it's pretty much follows the life of a young girl named Tina and her rebel love, Johnny 316, and their fight against forced religion and finding themselves and trying to figure out themselves in this big crazy world of Bible thumping Baptists, I guess.
Really? Is it based on your life, Charlie, or your life? Is it based on your experience?
It's a lot of my experiences. I just took a lot of stuff that I like and threw a little Faulkner in there, a little Flannery O'Connor, and mixed it in with some David Lynch and, you know.
And some singing.
And some singing.
And some rock and roll.
That's right.
Rock and roll, David Lynch, Faulkner, and Flannery O'Connor.
What else could you want?
How can you lose with that?
And naked girls.
Yeah.
So.
It's perfect.
It's quite a stew.
Now, is it a party atmosphere? Is it in a theater? When does it run? It's every Wednesday?
It's we're doing a short run right now for 6 weeks only at the King King at 6555 Hollywood Boulevard, just right there on Whitley, one block west of Cherokee. see.
The King King. What is that? Is that theater?
No, actually, it's a really big, it's an open space bar.
Oh,
it's,
cool.
But it's
a bar, Mark.
It's a real bar.
Yeah.
So there's a show
it's
done in a bar.
It's just a bar, man.
So you can get booze.
Oh, yeah.
Is it interactive? Can do yeah. people like, woo, oh, get on yeah. stage? And really?
Very interactive.
Oh, man.
The play takes place all over the bar. The bartenders are characters. We have the actors mingle with the crowd. The crowd is encouraged to, you know, speak out. And we serve alcohol, which makes the play better.
Oh, yeah. It can make a lot of things better, especially yeah. if you're engaging the audience element.
Absolutely. Yeah.
It's not so good if you don't want them to talk.
Yeah, no, we want them to talk. I mean, I'm just hoping that a fight breaks out or something. I'm trying to provoke the audience as much as I can.
That's interesting. Just like, so you have a sort of side story going on?
Absolutely. There's yeah. all kind of layers.
I have never been doing a show where a fight has broken out. I have had people try to pick fights with me when I've been on stage doing comedy, where one guy literally got up on stage
really?
Wearing a cowboy hat, because I'd mentioned something about his hat, and he just stood there like a big drunk idiot,
right.
like he was going to kick my ass. And I didn't know what to do, so I said, do you want to tell a joke? And I gave him the mic, and he did, and it was awful, and he left. Like,
right.
I humiliated him in a very clever way.
Wow. Very good.
So, Polly, can we talk about Graham Parsons?
Sure.
For a few minutes?
How can we miss out on that one?
Well, how old were you when he passed
seven.
Away?
7.
You were 7.
Yeah.
But he, obviously, the legacy is all around you.
Absolutely.
And I'm sure you have people that make pilgrimages to you.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. And they bathe my feet and, you know.
They do, right? Right?
Flower petals, often.
Your dad has one of those followings. I mean, he's one of those guys that didn't live long enough to have a full career, so he died mysteriously.
Yes.
He was buried mysteriously, and he was he changed music. He changed the face of music. So you do have those guys showing up going, you're Polly Parsons.
Yeah.
Has that happened? Do you have a weird story about it?
Well, you know, besides people trying to rub my belly and, you know, make wishes and stuff.
So what, now, can you just answer the mystery? What did happen after he died?
Well, as legend is told, he made a pact with 3 best friends that he didn't want to be buried in the ground, and if he was to go, he wanted to be cremated and his ashes sprinkled over the Joshua Tree desert. So when he did die, his friends stole his coffin off the tarmac at LAX. Hightailed it with a bunch of booze out to Joshua Tree, poured gasoline all over his coffin, and lit him on fire.
And that was it. And that's really the way it went.
Yeah, that's really the way it went. And I think that's pretty.
That's
pretty cool.
That is pretty cool. Now, in terms of your relationship with the family and with the music and everything else, I mean, what do you make of it? Why do you think he's... Because he's a guy, like, he's one of the only guys... I got very few songs on my iPod, and I've got Flying Burrito Brothers, and I've got Graham Parsons' music in the rotation, constant, like, it's always there. And there's a lot of people that aren't. I can't quite explain why, but there's something kind of mysterious and drawing about your dad that a lot of people don't have, and a lot of people don't even know who he is. A very specific type of following he has. What do you attribute that to?
I attribute that to the fact that when authenticity is in the room, people know it.
Yeah.
I attribute that to the fact that when there is something that resonates so deeply within us, and it's rare and it happens every once in a while, but there are specific people on the planet that for whatever reason have the ability to strike a chord within us that is a bit unexplainable.
Right.
And it stands the test of time.
Right.
His music, his lyrics, his intention, the guttural feeling that he was able to articulate himself with, I think is something that we all really... that resonates within all of us, and it's just an everlasting type of situation.
Yeah, I think that's true, because there's a few people that have that. A couple of modern country guys, Townes Van Zandt is another one that had that very, but he was much more depressed, I think, than your dad, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, yeah.
Is there a documentary about Graham Parsons that I'm missing out on? Because somebody just wrote on my blog, they're like, tell Polly that I saw Graham's pedal steel player at his store out here the other day in Austin. We love Graham in Austin.
Oh, Sneaky Pete.
Yeah.
Wow, that's pretty big. That's awesome. Sneaky Pete is a legend, absolutely. There is a documentary that was made by Gandalf Hennig.
That's the BBC one, right?
Yeah, I'm not quite sure exactly what he called it, but you can find it on the internet for
yeah.
sure. Yeah.
And do you talk to some of the you still talk to like any of the guys from Flying Reader Brothers or Andy Lou Harris?
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, really?
Absolutely.
Because they knew you when you were a little girl.
Absolutely.
Oh, that's wild.
Absolutely. It's like the Big Bears Club. You know, Chris Hillman's like an uncle, and Sneaky Pete and Chris Etheridge, and they're definitely that's my family.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
I don't even know what to say.
Absolutely.
Like, wow. Like, what's your favorite Graham Parsons song?
Well, you know, I would have to say the ones that were written about my mother are the most, the most impactful for me. Hot Burrito Number One, Hot Burrito Number Two.
Mm-hmm.
$1,000 Wedding is a beautiful story. My father took my mother to the nudie suit maker where he had, you know, on Lancashire, good old Nudie made his crazy marijuana leaf nudie suits, and he asked them to make my mother a floor-length white nudie suit wedding dress covered in white rhinestones.
Oh,
and
wow.
That dress was actually made for her wedding. And $1,000 Wedding is about the fact that she called off their wedding a day before and the announcements had already been sent out. And
what happened? Did they get
married?
They
never got married.
Wow.
They never got married. They both had broken hearts, and the history is in the music now.
And did they get along after that? I mean...
They did get along for my sake, but they were both very, very deeply in love and had a very tragic end to their relationship. And I think that it's affected, you know, obviously.
Uh-huh.
Historically, it affected both of them.
Yeah, how things turned out.
Yeah.
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 Well, I was glad that he made his music, and I and it seems like it's just weird that he is one of these guys, the nudie people I met. That's what I was going to say. Their daughters run it now, right?
Yeah, Jamie Nudie.
They're kooky. One of them wrote me a letter, and she's a fan of mine, and I corresponded with her a couple of times because I was going to go down there and see if I could get some duds, but I never went down there. Where is that place?
You know, I have no idea what they're doing with it now. I have no... The nudie no longer exists. They closed that down completely, and I guess from what I heard, one of the daughters opened a coffee shop.
Maybe that was it.
You
don't know. Okay.
I have no idea.
I hear you.
But they're wonderful girls. They were on board and brought nudie suits to the Graham Parsons tribute shows that I did at the Universal Amphitheater in the Santa Barbara County Bowl. They brought racks of those nudie suits, and Jim James from My Morning Jacket wore one, and Kathleen Edwards, and, like... Everybody got to wear a nudie suit if they wanted to.
So that's cool.
I was honored.
Are you in charge of the estate? Is that you?
Yes.
Oh, that's great. And is your mom still around?
My mother is still around. She lives in Santa Barbara.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And now, in terms of the family that you come from, that I didn't realize that Graham Parsons came from this huge moneyed family in Florida.
That's
that orange
they say.
Juice. Yeah.
I never experienced any of that.
Oh, no, you never saw any of that?
No.
All right, so now let's get back to the show.
Yeah.
I want to go see the show. When can I see the show?
You can see the show. The next one is June 28th, Wednesday night. Doors
will you put
are
me
at
on
8.
The, on the guest? And I'll pay. I'll pay to get in because I think it's important that we support the arts.
Oh, nice.
I don't drink, but I'll yell.
How refreshing.
Yeah, yeah. I'll yell if you want me to.
Maybe you'll get in the fight.
That would be great.
Maybe Jim and I will come in characters.
You know, I would
love
it.
You have to wear pasties.
Again?
Yes.
I make him do that all the time. What were you going to say, Charlie?
You can come on stage in a cowboy hat and I'll let you tell a joke.
Oh, man, that'd be great. So now the music, it's mostly kind of, you know, roots rock driven, kind of rock and roll stuff.
Right. I'm from Alabama, so it's got a little bit of that flavor in there.
Like, who's your favorite Southern rock band?
Lynyrd Skynyrd.
Give me three steps. Somehow or another, for like a Jewish kid from New Mexico, I had every one of the Skynyrd records.
Oh,
all the way up through Street Survivors. I had the original cover with the flames on it, and I was like, dude, what's that about? You can't get that one anymore.
That's right. A rare item.
Well, Charlie Turrell, Polly Parsons, thank you for coming down.
Thanks for having us.
And I'm excited about the show. I'm excited about your book. Go get this. I think this is the best book on your dad.
Yeah, thank you.
And it's very nicely written. Grievous Angel, an intimate biography of Graham Parsons. The show is Taking the Jesus Pill every Wednesday at King King. You can go to
smarttix.com.
There you go. And also markmaron.com to link to those sites. Talk to you later. See you at the show.
Thanks for having us, Mark.
You bet.
Thanks.
All night drinking. A big moon in the window. No time, just now. No rest till it gets you. A bad light.
He doesn't know what makes a man a man. Mark Maron.
Hey. Hey. All right. Man, that was cool. Sometimes I just turn into a goofy fanboy. Just turn right into a goofy fanboy. Huh?
So, there's nothing wrong with that, Mark.
What did you call yourself? Boy love? Love boy?
I'm a very beautiful boy.
A beautiful boy.
Are you threatened by my honesty? Is that why you smirk at that?
I don't know if I'd call you a boy. You know, I think it's kind of weird. I mean, beautiful man, maybe I'd give you that, I guess, in a weird way.
Our life expectancy is like, what is it, like 130 now with drugs and science? So, I'm still in the boy part of my life, aren't I? Don't you think? Look at me.
Sure. Oh, yeah, Jim.
Gaze upon this.
No, yes,
drink
you are.
Of me.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, this is getting weird now. Hey, let's take this call. Chris in Pomona, how are you? You're on the air with Mark Maron.
Hey, Mark, it's actually John Zach. The NSA guy has been tapping your phone.
Yeah.
It's my last day at the NSA.
Mm.
I'm going to L.A. tomorrow. Go full-time with the little show business thing.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, I'm doing a set Tuesday at the Fake Gallery. You want to hang out?
Really? You got a set at the Fake?
Well, it's not the real Fake. It's a fake gallery in Tujunga. So, can you drop by?
Tujunga? Man, it's kind of out of the way for me.
Yeah, that's cool. I'll probably see you afterwards. Listen, do you need a roommate?
I'm done with that guy. I'm done with it. It's weird because Maria Bamford's going to be at the Fake Gallery as this show is on the air. That's a real place. A lot of people don't realize that.
Yeah.
And I hope Paul appreciates my plugging his little place.
I'm going there this Saturday to see Charles Azell in Hail the Size.
Oh, Azell's band is playing?
That's right.
Man. I'd go to that, but I'm going to be presenting something at the Southern California Journalists' Ceremony thing.
Ooh, that sounds like a lot of fun.
Yeah, I got roped into being a presenter of something.
What are you going to present?
It's like the Southern California equivalent of the press dinner, press correspondence dinner. It's a Southern California correspondence dinner.
Ah.
Yeah. I don't know. I got a script, and I'm going to...
You know, there's going to be free food there. Bring your backpack.
Larry King's going to be there. Larry King.
Ooh, I saw him in person once at the Emmys in the green room.
How was that?
Oh, man, it was like being at that Star Trek episode where they have the aliens in there.
Yeah?
He looked like one of the aliens.
Yeah.
He's a very small guy.
Why do they...
Strange-looking man.
And just the suspenders and a little hunched
over. Yeah.
He's had like 9 heart attacks, hasn't he?
He's like a product of science. He's like 150 years old.
It's just a head in suspenders, that guy. Why do they release stories like this? New earthquake research confirms the southern end of the San Andreas Fault near Los Angeles is overdue for a big one. Why the hell do...
You know, I predict the next big one's on the East Coast.
No, any earthquake is going to be disastrous. But they say that the experts estimated that a quake on the southern San Andreas Fault of magnitude 7.6 or greater, that could kill thousands of people, billions of dollars in damage. Man, the last time this happened, it was 800 miles San Andreas Fault, 1906 San Francisco earthquake that led to 3,000 deaths. I mean, obviously things are a little different, but
yeah.
I don't. What the hell do you do with a story like that? Everyone says that about living out here.
But you prepare. You have a better chance of survival out here, I think, than you do on the East Coast, which had the last big quake was along the Mississippi, I believe, the early 1800s.
Someone wrote an article that that New York's right on one of these faults. New York City could go down.
Right off the coast, they have these huge trenches that you have an earthquake there, and all that land falls into the trench. You have a huge tsunami in addition to... an earthquake.
What the hell's the point, Buzzkill?
Well, I'm just saying, it's good we're here now.
I know, but there could be one out here. But you know what? Where I live, it's not earthquake area.
Well, you're on a rock, right?
I don't know. I'm just
Eagle
saying
rock.
That.
You have your...
I just know that my house isn't anchored because it was built before they anchored them. Yet it has been around since the early 20s, and it hasn't disanchored. You know?
Yeah, it's been through how many earthquakes since then? A lot, see?
Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah. I was going to read some email and talk about the war a little bit, but I guess we got off on that, didn't we? A lot of mixed messages coming from the GOP there to confuse people, to make them baffled and just go, Democrats are wussies.
Well, they are kind of. I can't believe that the Democrats are only slightly above.
I know. It's ridiculous.
The Republicans in the polls.
Lieberman should just become a Republican. Stupid bastard. Okay, here we go. Short order news. A new study says Earth's temperature is at a 400-year high. To help out, the Bush administration say they are making plans to drill a large thermometer-like pipeline into the Alaska wilderness to see if releasing hot oil would bring the fever down. President Bush referred to the study as an inconvenient lie before smiling and looking around the room to see if anyone got it. The Republican-controlled Senate killed a proposal election year increase in the minimum wage yesterday. At the current wage, Democrats say it will take at least two paychecks to buy some bootstraps to pull yourself up by. A restaurant in Florida has started serving a $100 hamburger. At about 5.5 inches across and 2.5 inches thick, the burger is so decadent, it actually forms a greased fist and s*** you off.
It's decadent.
Yeah, I'll say. That's the short order news for tonight. Make sure you beep that. I don't know what you would beep, but as I'm saying this now, you will have heard the beep. So whether we decide on jerks or...
It's hedonistic. That's
is that gonna, we gonna have to beep that too? That's not a really bad.
You can say
one.
And say hey,
off,
get off there.
Yeah. See, now we're gonna run into trouble. Now we're all gonna be panicking tomorrow. Isn't it weird how prescient that NSA thing was?
Oh man, don't big word. What does that mean?
Like very, I don't know. Tomorrow. Andy Kindler, Randall Fitzgerald, 100 Lies About Medicine and Food. Man, this is going to be scary. Martha Wainwright, beautiful singer, about the Leonard Cohen tribute thing. Good night, sheeple.